Okay, I have 1 o'clock. This is the regular board meeting of the Captiva Erosion Prevention District at South Seas Island Resort Alpha Cone Room this Monday, October 7, 2019 at 1 p.m. And roll call.
Michael Lanigan.
Mike Mullen.
And Harry Kaiser.
And do we have a motion for the approval of the August 12th board meeting minutes? This is the one that we changed, right?
I'll make a motion to approve of the not reading of the minutes from our August 12th meeting.
And accept those written?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Okay, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the September 26th board meeting minutes.
I will again make a motion to suspend for the reading of the minutes from our September 26th meeting and accept them.
That's right. Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, discussion?
The only thing on page 10, Joe Carolyn, you refer to us. I would refrain from writing in the first person and write in the third person on for minutes. Other than that, I think that was that's a minor technical point, but that's the only thing. Everything else I thought was quite accurate and well done.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Approval of the September 26, 2019 final budget hearing meeting minutes. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to dispense with the reading of the minutes of our September 26th final budget meeting and accept them as printed.
I'll second it, Harry.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Before we, I guess we're going to go into public comment, but you must be John Sylvia then, right? Hi, John. Nice to see you. Yeah. I think I'd like to.
Hi, Dick. Dick's here as
yeah.
Well.
I think I'd like to take this time to invite John to say a few words to the group. Tell us about yourself, if you like.
Sure.
How's your back doing?
Better. So I got the x-rays on Friday.
Good
so,
luck.
We'll see what happens. We'll meet the doctors. So I'm John Sylvia. My wife and I, Tiffany, moved here in April. We are full-time residents, so we are all in, as they say. I was the chief economist at Wells Fargo / Wachovia from 2002 to 2018 last year. During that time, I worked on the business advisory committee for the city of Charlotte. It's the mayor's business advisory committee, and much as you might suspect, it was dealing with issues like permitting process, dealing with parks, especially in the city, in terms of allocating money and what parks needed to be upgraded or not. During that time in Charlotte, I also worked on the governor's economic development board. And we traveled the entire state of North Carolina looking at different metropolitan areas and trying to evaluate where they were and how best the state might spend some of its promotional money, not the fundamental budget money, but promotional money in certain metropolitan areas in the state. Before being at Wells Fargo / Wachovia, I was the chief economist at the Senate Banking Committee in Washington, D.C. So that's a little bit of my background. I am an economist. I'm not going to apologize for it. We make sometimes difficult decisions, and sometimes we make difficult decisions not really knowing all the facts involved or the uncertainties in the future. So thank you for your
time. Okay. Thank you, John. Anybody have any questions?
No.
Any other public comment? They should have been, yeah. Commissioner Lanigan has asked me the question as to whether you were advised that we would probably not have a vote today since we don't have a full.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I had asked the staff to reach out to you, so I just want to make sure you knew that. So. Financial report ending September 30th, 2019. On page 27 to 35. Now, our treasurer being absent, would the staff like to address anything in this?
I'd like to talk about the residual budget column, and have clarification on that.
Yeah, this is just so I can say, it's on page 35, is this the reserve accumulation, or is this not the residuals on an earlier page?
It's throughout the financial report,
so
it's just an overall statement on the residual.
Go ahead.
It's basically column G minus column D, but if column D is higher than column G, then the answer is zero in column H. So it looks like there might be some errors there, but it's a little bit of a formula for that.
For my own edification, so D is the year-to-date actual, so that's what's been spent up to whatever month we're at, and G is what was forecasted for the annual budget. And I realize that sometimes we can't predict where some of these numbers come in, but I would think if our year-to-date actual exceeds the annual budget, that we would have a negative number represented in parentheses.
They just have it at zero.
Okay.
So it's
it doesn't really, the whole idea, I think, is to try to, a residual budget is to try to show a variance of the actual versus the year, the annual budgeted number. All right, let's discuss that with the treasurer as to whether we want to have that done differently, but it does get confusing when it goes...
Describing is column F.
Yeah, and I would think that there would be some representation there similar to the variance, because there's nothing left in your budget, so you've overspent. It means you're actually negative in your budget, correct? I'll leave it alone for now. We'll ask the treasurer about it the next time. And then the other question that I had last meeting had to do with the July 19th reserve accumulation.
We are, they are backing those numbers out of the parking lot.
So they're changing this,
basically. Yes, okay. They are. We discussed it.
And for purposes of the public or anyone who was not here the last time, we typically run an expense every month that can be from sometimes as much as $10,000 in issues related to the management of the parking. It generates a lot of income for the district, which therefore gets accumulated and reduces the assessment when it comes time to do the beach. We suddenly saw a $48,000 $48,000 expense, and that was because there's capital expense that they factored into this, what is essentially a maintenance budget. Is that right? Okay. So they're going to correct that, and we'll have the new one for the next meeting. Any questions about that?
I have one. Is our parking numbers still holding up the way they did?
Yeah, we're having a very good year.
We're having a very good year.
Yes. So it's much better than last year because of all the time issues.
Uh-huh.
So.
Okay. That same reserve accumulation, it's whatever is earned after expenses gets accumulated towards the future nourishment project, and is the reserves are used not just for that, but primarily to reduce the cost of the nourishment project. So in this particular case, it's showing the revenue, and there wasn't a question on the revenue number. The question really had to do with why we suddenly had an extreme. Well, it wasn't a negative as much as it was an extreme expense in 1 month. So anyway, we'll get a new posting of that, and then the monthly revenue number. This is saying it's running anywhere from, it's been as low as 20,000 in October, as high as 45,000 in April. So in season it runs high. It was 27,000 in September. So it looks like it is running higher than last year, but it's a good number. And the expenses typically run, as I said, 5,000-ish. Okay, any other questions on the financial report? Okay, the standard operating procedure for appointing a commissioner has been submitted and looked at a couple of times, but submitted by administration. And you incorporated some changes from the last time?
We did. We made the changes that we all discussed at the meeting.
36 to 44.
44. We also included attached with it the... what a tally sheet might look like, what a voting sheet and what a tally sheet would look like.
I saw that, yeah. maybe we should talk about that. But I do have a question. At the last meeting, we discussed the idea, whether it wouldn't go in here necessarily, but the idea of excused absences. And we're certainly facing a problem maintaining a quorum when we have people missing the meetings. And I understand this year, Harry's usually reliably missing too.
Yeah.
We both missed July because we usually cancel July and we didn't do it this year. But we do have a problem because I think that there are times when, like this, I flew in yesterday and I'm leaving Wednesday because I was concerned about the quorum. And that's happened a few times. So I would prefer to be able to just dial in on the phone. But if we don't have a physical quorum of three, we can't have a meeting.
Yeah.
So. Okay, should we, you think we, under Appendix B, what is expected of a commissioner? Maybe we need to have a statement that says reliably attending monthly board meeting, if not physically present, at least on the telephone. Anybody got any thoughts on wording there?
I think there's something in the rules.
In the rules of procedure, it talks about no more than three
excused absences.
Right. So I was actually going to suggest that maybe what we want to do is not have administration decide what an excusal is, which is basically somebody calls or doesn't show, but actually have the board vote on whether the absence should be considered excused or not. And I get that people get busy and have other responsibilities, but that's problematic to our duties.
Right.
And I think it would be important to at least mention something in here saying, you know, no more than whatever the number is, three excused absences, so that they know what's expected of them.
Okay.
And, you know, we've been very flexible over the years, and also if we have people, three people physically present, those who dial in, you know, can join the meeting by phone, can still vote. So we realize that in this day and age, we're all traveling and there's a lot of other responsibilities, but we should be able to meet that requirement. And they're going to find in today's meeting there's a couple of items that I think will get put off till next month, because the absence of, well, we only have four commissioners now, but the absence of a larger board makes me uncomfortable in taking votes on certain issues because they're not broadly represented. So that gets to be a problem. Any thoughts on that, Mr. Lanigan?
So we're going to say that you're allowed to have three excused or unexcused absences, and that's it? Whether the
Three absences, but if excused, it has to be voted upon by the. That's just a thought.
Yeah, okay.
I'm willing to listen to other ideas.
That seems reasonable. We can work on the verbiage, I suppose. In the next
yeah, we'll work on the verbiage and try to get that. But that would go into the rules of procedure, I believe.
Yes.
And then
into here.
That has a whole process of how to change the rules of procedure and has to be voted upon,
yes,
you know, by the board, and I think there may be even a time period that we have to show the new rules, and then, I don't remember, but there was some kind of a constraint around that.
Okay.
Typically there is with bylaws, I don't know if it's the same with the rules of procedure, but I don't think we usually say in the meeting we're going to make this change. I think we kind of want to announce it to the community and make sure it's on the agenda in advance so that people who have opinions on it might come and say something. So now, relative to the SOP as written, pages 36 to 44, any other thoughts? Has anybody had a chance to review it again and see if there's any further questions? It looked to
on
me
the
like...
Voting?
Huh?
On the voting? Oh, we know that.
Yeah, on the process of selecting a new commissioner.
Yeah, I do have a an issue with the... I don't like the first one, that the person with the most number one votes is announced and call it. Let's say there's 11 candidates, you know, at another time, and, you know, one person gets three and the other eight are split, you know, by the other, but, you know, in another way, and, you know, we have four commissioners, because obviously we're voting to replace somebody, so you can see a math where somebody might be number one on more than anyone else's slate, but they might be the last person, or, you know, and so their number's going to be much larger, you know. I just think a weighted average, or just a numeric average. We said number of candidates, one, two, three, there'd be, you know, I think we just add it up and that's it, as opposed to saying who has the, you know, you have one person with two votes, and let's say in this instance, right, we have three great candidates. If, you know, one person gets two votes and the other commissioners vote for two other individuals, and they put the other candidates, the commissioner's number one choice at three, I don't know what the numbers would add up to, but it may not be that the person with the two votes has the lowest numerical score.
Right. And so, I thought that was how we had it before. You look, you took the numerical value, and right. whoever had the lowest was the candidate that would be voted on first, right. of course. But then I thought we talked at the meeting about changing it, so maybe you
can make a suggestion?
Of course.
That we create a couple of samples of what I did, and I was looking at another approach, and I did, mm-hmm. and I didn't see a way that you could break a tie when there's four right. commissioners. No matter how it works out, it right. could potentially be a tie. Okay. But my feeling is, let's do a couple of examples, okay. not right this minute, but before next month and before we're actually going to use it. And for the benefit of the public, what we're talking about is Carolyn had come up with an idea that she said she had sourced some information elsewhere, but an idea that if there's three candidates, and this is a rare situation because we normally have one candidate, one time I remember two, so it's unusual that we have more than the one or two candidates, is that she's suggesting a ballot where well, each commissioner identifies who they want. So let's call it A, B, and C. So two people vote number one for A, and the others each vote number one for B. Then you would go to the next level and add it in until you have somebody that has a majority of votes. But if you add them all up, you're going to wind up getting the same numerical value all around if somebody votes for all the candidates, I guess. But anyway, whatever it is, we were trying to see if we could tweak it so as we would make it quick in terms of being able to get to the result fast and not having to go through multiple motions. And I think Commissioner Lanigan was proposing that whatever we do on the ballot, it would be a signed ballot, it would be totaled, but we would then automatically go into a motion that supports the candidate that had the most votes. So I would like to see us work it out in a little worksheet and look at a couple of examples and be careful of what's going on and then hand it out the next meeting so everybody understands. It's a little confusing. I was trying to advocate doing something similar to what's done in some voting districts in the country and states now, like Oregon and so on, where you put your first choice, your second choice, whatever it may be, and then if you don't have a majority on the first ballot, you then go add in who, how many people have voted for the person on the second ballot, which would then take somebody up to, or third, whatever takes it up to a majority. It got complicated in explaining it, but the idea is to try be able to say the person who garners the most vote in the least number of ballots is the person who would be selected. So please do that, and then it'd be easier to understand, I think.
But now it's still going to be the person that gets the most number one votes will win.
No. Depends on how it works out. I mean, I can show you.
I think we need to see the example so that it's very clear to everybody what we're talking about. It's difficult to explain it. And any input that anybody in the public wants to offer on the subject about it, we're certainly open-minded to hear what's what. But then the rest of the SOP, except for this actual voting process, are you okay with the rest of the wording?
I would like then that would be binding. The winner of the voting, that's we can discuss that. You don't have to agree with that. That's what I would suggest, though, as opposed to then opening up for discussion. I think that, you know, we just voted. Here's our number, you know, whatever method we use, whether it's the most number one votes or the lowest total score, wins.
I think your rules of procedure say that they have to be, you have to have a motion, a seconded, and a vote.
Okay, well then.
For that.
No, well it would. You could make a motion that says, please fill out the ballot under the following description, and somebody seconds it, and the person who has the whatever number of votes, et cetera, would wind up being appointed as the commissioner. So you would do it, and then it would have to be that the motion, when voted upon, needs a majority of the whole district, right? It needs at least three votes. So I think we can word it carefully and with a couple of examples so that everybody understands what's going on. We'll be able to move forward with it.
Do we want to discuss a tiebreaker? No matter what example we pick, we still have to figure that out.
Yeah, if there's a tiebreaker, there isn't going to be a motion that can carry. I think that what we have to do is tear up the ballot or save the ballot, but start all over again and see if somebody changes their opinion. Because I can't think of any other way around.
Redo the ballot, okay?
Yeah, we could you know flip a coin, but I think that's a little too capricious. But anybody disagree with that? I mean, doesn't it make sense that if we can't get the votes down.
No,
we have
that's
to
fine.
Propose. And then somebody's got to reconsider whether they want to make a change or whatever. So. It's nice to be able to have more candidates than we've had in the past. So let's just figure this out. It's not that complicated. So we'll hold off on the SOP till that gets built in, and we want the SOP, Carolyn, to say if a, you know, I guess if there's a clear majority for somebody. Is that what we want to say, clear majority, or the most number of votes, number one votes?
The lowest point total.
The lowest point total is moved to be appointed as the next commissioner.
Thanks.
And I think there'll be a few more of these coming up in the next couple of months, just for the record, so it's worth getting this right. Okay, 2019-2020 time and materials contract for our engineering consultants, APTHEM, page 45 to 57.
Are you skipping B?
What did I skip? Sorry. Oh, I'm looking at the table of contents, but you're right. I should be looking over here. B is the, it's the same thing, right? It's B is the 2019-2020. I'm reading from the left, but I should. But it's the same item. So the idea is that our rules of procedure say that you need a resolution for an amount in excess of $25,000, right? $25,000 and over. Okay. And so we modified those rules last year at some point to take it from $10,000 to $25,000. During the course of that time, APTHEM has been performing certain time and materials work from time to time, and you cited the example of the, what was it, the...
LGFR.
Yes.
Well, actually, we had the LGFR done separately, but okay. For example, when they came to the meeting, when they came to the meeting in June and presented...
Yeah, they're going to bill us after the fact for that, and it will have been pre-approved. We wouldn't have to have approved, you know, each meeting, right? Now, what kind of confused me about it is I was looking to say, how does this fit into, so we don't have a death by a thousand cuts, how does this fit into a bigger picture relative to how much do we intend, I mean, do they have a budget for the year and so on, and I think I was trying to better understand that, and you might want to address that, but I actually did have one change to the agreement, regardless of what was motivating it. What page is the agreement on?
It starts at
45. 45, right. Okay. Under the next to the last paragraph, the last sentence in that says, the work proposed herein will be performed on a time material basis not to exceed $24,911 without authorization from CPD. I just thought it should say without prior authorization. So obviously if we're approving these things, there is prior authorization. But I want us to obviously still be looking at the numbers and having them submit timesheets or whatever we think is appropriate, that's all.
Yeah, we can do that. Just as a little bit more information for the board, this all started, to my knowledge anyway, last July, I think it was. Damon had explained he had requested an APTHEM hourly service contract to pay for small engineering services. He said like the LGFR fund. One of the things, here's a couple of examples that we used them for this past year, would have been the federal funding history on the 2021 project when we asked them to find that document that proved that CEPD actually paid, well, that proved the Army Corps did not pay for the sand landward in the first re-nourishment in 88, that kind of thing. And then also the Sandoval physical monitor wavering request, the Turner Beach riprap rehabilitation. Those are the kinds of
things. So things come up from time to time that are legitimate services that we have a pre-approval to expand a certain amount of money for.
Exactly. Right.
Can you point out in the what page in the budget this is going to be found, this 24911.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, we're in the budget. It seems like
first
the budget
of all,
starts.
It's the capital budget, I assume. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is this capital, not general fund?
We have it under project consultant.
Okay, so the...
What page are you looking at, Joe?
60. Last year it was at 118, but I wanted to separate out the economist fees from the engineering fees.
So this is actually is not yet approved for the upcoming year. And you're saying that under project consultant engineering is where the monies are allocated for this. Is that right?
Yeah, when we did a rollover, and I have no justification of why we're rolling it over. So I just use the same numbers. But we want to put that down to 25 grand, knowing that we're just going to spend it. But I thought this next year is going to be a big year for us. So
yeah, I would think a lot of issues are going to come up. That's sort of where I was coming from, is that maybe we can get a better plan from them relative to what they think the expenditures are going to be, other than the dredging and all that sort of stuff. So that's a separate issue. Now, you're asking where it's located. Have you seen that now?
Well, I assume it's part of the engineering project consultant, correct?
Yes.
It's part of the 88,000?
Yes.
What's confused me about the whole thing is that the meeting in which Damon asked us to raise the level to $25,000, and we did, we said in that, I think it was in that same July meeting, that the following month they would come in with the revised proposal, and it didn't occur, that was July, it didn't occur until February of this year. So I remember in the February meeting saying, I thought we had approved this. It turns out we had actually discussed approving it the following month. It never came up. I'm not sure why it didn't come up, but...
Yeah, and I don't know why it
okay,
didn't come
okay,
up.
Okay, I'm just saying. So I think what happens is when we put something off like that for a month or so, we ought to have it on the agenda the next month.
Absolutely.
And if we keep putting it off, we can keep showing it on the agenda as put off.
Right.
But I think, because I knew I had remembered us doing work on it, just that we had not actually approved and executed.
Right, it never made it back on.
But we did do it in February of this year.
We did.
Okay.
Right, yeah. Let me follow up on that point.
Yeah.
So speaking of APTM and budget and all that sort of thing. In the August meeting, Commissioner Kaiser said he wants to make sure we get best prices for renourishment that are possible, and Chairman Mullins suggested that the CEPD hire an independent engineering company to come in and review APTM's plan. Have we made any progress on that?
No.
Okay.
I will make a note of it.
So let's talk about that. What do you need? What kind of help or guidance, or what can we do to get that? I remember it, you know, it was a little uncomfortable when APTM was here in June. Mm-hmm. I said to them, I asked them what's so special about them that we just continue to go back to them time after time, and I never see a competing bid, a competing proposal. So and maybe, you know, and there is something. There is value in a long-standing relationship.
Right.
I mean, the fact that they were able to pull that information out, that there's value to that. So you're willing to pay something extra. On the other hand, I want to make sure that, you know, we need to make sure, and I think that's Commissioner Mullen and Commissioner Kaiser were mentioning, that it's like we're in the ballpark here.
Right. Just for clarity, do you want us to have someone review the renourishment project that they put together? Is that what you want reviewed?
That's something we should discuss.
Yeah.
Can I just say that I had asked Damon when he was here about the, or he volunteered, the procedures that are followed by Lee County relative to competitive bidding. And I did do some research a couple of years ago, and we did actually, before this whole project was awarded to APTM to continue for the next level of nourishment, et cetera, we did actually bring in, and it might have been for the 2012-13 project, but we did go out to seek competitive bids. First of all, the law says that you can use consultants on an ongoing basis where they have specialized skills or they're unique to it. So there was some explanation that kind of justified why you could continue to use the same people, but at the same time, we've had complaints from people in the community that say that these guys' rates are high and they keep coming in again. So we did go out and we had one other company come and bid, and they really didn't make the mark with anybody relative to knowing what we were doing and so on. And it wasn't a very substantial company, but I don't even remember who they were. But so what happened is at that point in time, we continued with APTM. And I think that there is a difficulty when somebody knows your project, knows the specifics, knows what's required, to go out every time and get a bid on each individual item. So you want to, that's why it would be nice to have a bigger sense of what it is that they're going to be spending so that we can ask for bids on things like that. But I think that we recognize that there is sort of an inertia involved or momentum, if you want to call it that, with somebody who's been doing work for us in this area for a period of time. It doesn't mean that we're going to get the sharpest answer, but they might be able to get the answer and get the work done faster and cheaper just because they're deeply involved in it. I'm curious, Steve Battelle, if you have any thoughts on how the county handles things like that for
big projects. Our procurement department is fairly strict in their interpretation of the Florida statute, and for any construction project with a value of $2 million or more, they require us to go out independently with a CNA process. So we're continually putting it out there, letting them compete, give us their proposals for how they would approach the project, and then a committee of five will rank and recommend that to the county commissioners to hire those professional services on a project-by-project basis for our construction work. We use our ongoing annual contracts for permit-required monitoring only, really. Mm-hmm.
So to that point, at the time this came up last year, Damon had said he would go and get a copy of the county procedures, which we can still do, and that we would try to incorporate them into our process. And I don't know how to do that. That's going to take some work, or you know, a special project or whatever it may be, but that we would try to create standard procedures that say this is how we're going to go about, like establishing the levels. And then there was also points that he had made about who can bid. I think that there's some government, that the county follows some government regulations regarding giving minorities opportunity. Whatever it was, there was a series of criteria that we don't really look at, and we may not be required to look at, but he thought was smart to have in our agreements. And even some of these other had been pointed out that, for example, the tilling of the beach, we once upon a time, mm-hmm. I think when Kathy Rooker first came in, we hadn't been getting bids on that, so we said we got to go out and get competitive bids on that, and then we get used to using somebody and we don't get a competitive bid again. And so I think it should be in each of those situations, maybe it's over a certain dollar threshold, that we do go out and ask multiple people to bid. Now, you have, part of what we're going to look at today, you've been looking for an accounting company, and for some time there's been concerns about the current accounting or bookkeeping services that are being performed, right?
Right.
And so you've gone out and you've gotten some, I don't know, did you get two bids on that or something? Yeah. I saw the details of one. There may be details of two, but the one I saw was like a $48,000 annual cost for,
yeah,
which seemed exorbitant to me. But anyway,
they're both here and they're both high.
Okay, I might have missed the other one. So, but in any event, the point is that if we establish a procedure, we want to establish a threshold. We don't want to go out for, you know, every time we buy pencils or whatever, unless it exceeds a certain threshold. But I think we do need to do that, and I think that it shouldn't get in the way of this particular proposal from Aptum, because you're saying you need these services and they're doing work and they're coming over and they need a renewed agreement. The one thing I would say is we shouldn't let it lapse for 6 months. I'm not blaming
right.
anybody, however that happened, but it then gets very foggy in my mind as to what we're actually spending with them when it drags out like that. So, in any event.
So just backing up a little bit for clarity, do the three of us think that we should check their overall bid for the renourishment? Or were we talking, you know what I'm saying? Carolyn asked that question and it was kind of left out there.
Well, I think that we should make a decision on the specific contract that's in front of us, because there's work that they're doing ongoing that you need to be able to ask them for, and you're saying we've run out of funds under the last time this was approved or whatever, we're spending money against
it. The time has ended.
Okay.
Time frame.
Yeah. So I think that we should deal with that. It's a $25,000 number. Get it out of the way. But then we should separately.
Just for clarity, it's a $24,999.
Yes, it is. It's under $25,000.
I also want to make it clear we've put a hold on the Redfish Pass study, the $349,000.
I thought we were pending.
We just had to
come to account for that.
I know, but after we sent us an email saying they're going to wait on us,
they're waiting to hear from us about it.
To get started.
To move forward with
this.
Yes.
The point was made by somebody in the audience, it could have been Sanibel or Lee County, that if the TDC has not yet had the money approved by the county, we can't start work and expect to get reimbursed retroactively.
Correct.
So what we said is let's hold off the commencement of that project and we expected in the TDC's budget into September, I guess it was.
It was passed.
And that has been passed.
It was.
And the money is available.
Yes.
The county is paying for it.
Yes.
And now we need to give the okay.
Yes.
To Apton to proceed on that.
Yeah, but they have a contract with us right now. When is that contract up?
May I?
Go ahead.
So they have several different contracts with
I realize that.
Depending on
yeah.
what the work is. So we have a contract with them for the Redfish Pass.
Right.
And they're holding off on that until we tell them, you know, mm-hmm. funding has come through from the county.
Right.
Go ahead and move forward. We're at that point right now. We also have a contract with them for time and materials, but it was through September 30th. So mm-hmm. now we need a new one, which is why we have this one. We also had an additional scope of work contract just for them to submit and review and update the LGFR, which is the state federal funding.
Right.
So we have different projects with right. them that...
But our next, because pretty soon, whoever are, they're going to have to go out and get bids and things like that. I mean, we're hunkering down.
They will go out and
yes.
get bids
that's
for the
I'm
work
saying.
That will be done for the renourishment that's coming.
Right.
Is that
right.
what you mean?
Yes.
yes.
But
yes.
they have a contract for that?
We have a preliminary scope of work for them. I
yeah.
don't believe anything has been signed with them, has it?
We should bring them over and review
what?
Okay, the
at.
Total picture where we're at.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And give us an updated plan to see where all that stands, okay? But I would ask that we get a motion to approve this under $25,000 number so that you can continue to draw on those consulting services. So, somebody like to make a motion on that?
You make a motion this time.
I make a motion to approve the request and approve the contract with Apton to continue going
time
forward for time and what is this? A time and
yeah.
materials for amount not to exceed $24,911.
Mm-hmm. Second.
And I'll second it.
Okay, seconded by Harry. Discussion.
Mm-hmm.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved. But let's separately, Carolyn and Joe, schedule something. Maybe we do it at a briefing meeting or something and make it, you know, pretty thorough where they present and review and we go over what's what so that we can understand when we discuss it in the public meeting. Well, that's a public meeting as well, so. I was a little bit confused at our final budget meeting that we didn't do the capital budget because I had been under the impression from the past that we actually advertised the capital budget as well as the... Does that matter that it be done with the... No, okay. So you're saying that...
I looked through last year's, and last year the capital budget was done also in October.
Okay. Have you reviewed with Apton the numbers that are in here?
Got an email from them just today, so it's a little bit late.
Okay. Because what I'm concerned with was Joe's comment that the numbers are just sort of moved. And I get why you did that. But I don't know what the numbers should be, and I don't mind approving it and then going back, and we can do a budget adjustment later on. This doesn't require advertisement, I guess, to the public because it's not
correct.
Part of the trim process, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So we have opportunity to make a correction on that. So, okay, well, I'm in favor of approving the budget as is and then expecting that we sit down in this review process and then see if we have adequate resources mm-hmm. in there. And it's not just for them. I think that on the capital project, there's some of the economist dollars being spent in there and other things that are outside the normal scope, right?
I'm concerned about the special assessments principle for this next year, and I reached out to the CPA trying to get clarification on that number. But
about what the amount of money is that
yeah,
they're showing is
yeah,
still outstanding.
Yeah, rolling over $250,000 again on special assessments, and I don't see any backup reasoning for that. So.
Yeah, we probably should have a reconciliation done between how much we originally said we were going to assess, which I believe was $5+ million or whatever it may be, spread out over time. Some people paid up front, but we should be getting an annual reconciliation. It's like a bank balance
yep.
check. And so if
I
we can
agree.
Get that done, that would be very useful.
Yeah, we reached out.
Okay, on the budget, though, I lost track here now. Do we have questions on this capital budget?
Just on, is the final number a negative $1.24 million? Well, on page 60, is that where we're?
Yes.
If I can, and please jump in and
please
correct me. We borrow the money, and we work with reserves that we've kept from before to start the project, and we actually complete the entire project out of past reserves and borrowed monies, and we don't actually start assessing for that project until it's finished so that we know what the numbers are. So the way the enabling legislation is established, we go out and do this referendum, we get an authorization to borrow, mm-hmm. and or use what we have available that's left over from ad valorem budgets or parking, etc., and we move forward with monies that we have. So we have the cash flow, but the actual assessment against the monies that are spent on the project don't occur probably until 2021, 2022, but some period of time after the project is completed and all the expenses are known and all of the funding is known, so we actually know what the legitimate cost of the project is, and then we can't exceed $18 million on that. So we will run some negative numbers. It's not a cash flow statement, though. It's basically an accrual statement.
Okay.
Does that sound right? But I think as part of our process, when we sit down with them, we should go through the elements of this that apply to them as well. So I think we have a need for an approval, a motion to approve the project budget for fiscal year 19-20.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay, I'll second it. Now we can discuss it. There's more questions.
I guess I just need more time on this. If we need, you know, I don't feel comfortable.
Okay.
But I know where all the reserves are coming from. The process that you described, I'd rather go.
Let's take that as a no vote for now. The motion does not carry. We need to get the resolution of that for next month. And but there's a lot in it. There's no question. There's a lot in it. If you could try to set up that beach brief, briefing meeting ahead of time. I'm back. I'm leaving Wednesday. I'm back on the 16th. I'm leaving on the 26th. So I need to juggle my schedule depending on when you get those things set up. We already have, I believe, on the 17th of the month, the economist Gary Jackson coming in to work with us, right, on some stuff. So I think I'd like to keep that on our plate. So if you could pick another date, and then I'll just try to juggle my schedule accordingly.
I can try for the 24th. You said you're here till the 26th.
I am, yeah. I was trying to avoid the 24th because I'm disputing my property appraisal on the 25th, so I was going to try to give myself some extra time. But if you could move it to early.
I'm going to get him to do the 31st. She has small kids.
No, I'm not worried about that. I was thinking early November when I come back in November. But let me go over that with you afterwards, and let's establish a time that works with our calendars.
So who's going to come in, Mike, to go over the capital budget with us?
We're asking to get the Apton people to go over their needs
relative to
forecasting ahead. And I think just us. I don't know who else.
I think I can get that done and present a report to you.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. Yeah. No, that would be great. So let's see what that is. But then my feeling is it's to really be able to spend a lot of time without having, you know, too many people sitting around trying to follow the detail without worksheets in front of them.
Okay.
Public is invited to those things. Every one of our meetings is in public. Okay, so this did not carry. Now we're into old business. On the old business, you have a emeritus commissioner. So this is the concept that was proposed by Commissioner Lanigan. As far as we know, we could do that. We don't necessarily have a candidate for it yet, right?
No.
So, but the idea there is that somebody could, at some point, who's been around for a long period of time and can lend value and knowledge and et cetera to the meetings, can still join us, but have the title Commissioner Emeritus. Okay.
We did reach out to the FASD to ask any of the districts, the Florida districts, if any of them had such a position, and they do not. So we're still doing some research, and I've talked with Nancy Straw, but she doesn't see any reason that we couldn't. The only issue, of course, is that the person, you have to decide how it's going to be handled.
Yes.
Do they have a seat up front? Do they get copies of all the materials and agenda ahead of time, but again, have no vote? And, you know, just the details, what you want it to look like.
And they don't lose their title if they miss three meetings.
Right. Yes, some of them even said that you only have, I did find something online that talked about a group in St. Louis, Rainbow Village Board, and they have one, and they only have to make one meeting a year.
The RFP for the accounting firm, now let me just go through the history here. The accounting firm that had been doing our bookkeeping and so on, for this is not the auditing firm, right?
Correct.
Okay, this accounting firm, the individual who worked for them left and went somewhere else, but they wanted to keep the contract and he would continue to do the work. And that company is Stromer and Company, right? It turns out that he hasn't been coming to meetings anymore. We used to want the accountant at these meetings to address questions with the finances and so on. Other things have been, this has been going on, again, since Damon had brought up trying to find another company. Mm-hmm. Bob had actually at one point suggested we also want to have forensic accounting done because we've had this turnover of administration in the past. And he was suggesting that right after Kathy left. But whatever it is, you've reached out and you've tried to find a company because you're not satisfied with the current person. What are we paying currently to Stromer and Company versus what we're getting as bids from the new company?
So I believe, let me just get to the page. It's, the synopsis is on page 61 of your packet. And we currently pay Stromer $25.83 per month. Now, in that agreement, they were supposed to be present. Mm-hmm. So they're, I mean, technically we could break that agreement with them at any time because they've been breaking it. They would be interested in keeping that, but they still don't have anybody that could attend the meetings. And they said they might be able to bring that down for us. So the total yearly cost with them has been $30,000.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The next closest one is 42, almost 43. Yeah. And that's without meeting attendance. There are 48 with meeting attendance.
That's Infomark in both cases?
Yes.
And then what's the other company?
NOAC is a Sanibel Island accounting firm.
Yeah.
And they have some minimal government experience, but they come in at 4,500 without meeting attendance. I'm sorry, 45,000 without meeting attendance, 51,000 with.
Okay.
The 30,000 is very reasonable. Cause, you know, well, I work,
it is what you get what you pay for.
It's the lowest price, but it doesn't make it a bargain.
At all.
Right.
But just to do the yearly report, to go to the IRS or anybody else who wants it, 30,000 is pretty reasonable.
Now they're not our they're our bookkeepers. So they do our invoices, they do our checks for us, they do the financial reports monthly for us. They do anytime anyone requests a payoff account amount, they do that. Anything else they do?
I can't.
That's about
the whole thing.
Will you tell them about
how many checks do they write a month?
This isn't a lot of work.
No, I was going to say.
25 checks.
And then they're posting to QuickBooks or Quick. Is that what it is, QuickBooks?
Right.
Okay. So how many postings a month are there to QuickBooks?
None.
Many.
25.
And then all the revenues that come in the bank statements.
Are they doing the reconciliation of the bank
statements?
Okay. And they're also interfacing with the auditor once a year to share information with the auditor and so on. Okay. Who does tests of receivables or any kind of tests that auditors sometimes do to see that the money, what's happening, matches reality?
Right. Any questions that Molden and Jenkins has ever had about that kind of thing goes to Jack F. Stromer.
Okay.
And he's the one that's still handling our account.
Historically, when I have accounts with money managers or whatever it may be, I get a letter, like from, say, Sanibel Captiva Trust Company, saying this is what we're showing is, you know, the numbers in your account or the number of outstanding receivables or whatever it may be, but they do samplings of the marketplace to get independent verification rather than just from the accountant or just from the office. And we call those accounting, I call them accounting tests. I don't know what they actually call them these days, but Dick, you certainly know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it seems to me that's what our accountant should be doing. That's what our the CDB auditing firm, they're the ones.
Yeah, that's Malden and Jenkins, but they've been turning to the accountant for the information.
So. I don't know that.
Okay, well, I would ask about that.
They could go to them directly rather than going to Stromer, too. You know, if you didn't want to have to pay Stromer, you probably could find a way to do those 25 checks a year internally. I mean,
yeah.
It just doesn't seem.
You know,
$1,000 a year.
Or assessment payments. I mean, typically in my experience, auditors will do some method of random testing to validate information that they're being given by management. And not that they may not be required. And I don't know governmental accounting as well as I know business accounting, and I know there's some differences there. But one of these companies you said doesn't have governmental accounting?
Minimal. Nowak has minimal.
And the other one does have governmental
accounting. Yeah, Nowak has a lot.
And we kind of just lumber along in the interim until this is resolved.
Yeah, so I would hate to make a decision on that without the treasurer.
Okay, I agree with that. Let's wait till the treasurer is here next month. I would like to reach out to, because I've been on boards of, say, the Ding Dolling and the Wildlife Society and the National Wildlife Refuge Association and so on. And we typically will go to some other similar organizations, SCCF or whatever, to find out who have a range of, you know, the N number of checks and N number of deposits and so on, and then you try to figure out from that what it should be. This does strike me as high, but I don't know. I haven't done it, you know. So let me try to do something like that before the next meeting, and then let's try to reach out to the treasurer and ask him if he wants to weigh in on it. Do you have any experience?
I did note that, like, the one company, Infomark, has said their first year will be more expensive. And then the second year, they've actually given us a discount.
It wasn't that significantly different, though.
It wasn't huge, but... Okay.
All right, the... The DEP discussion regarding beach access and hotel accommodations. Again, to put this into context, we are not getting the kind of cost share on these projects from the state and from the federal government that we think we should get. And a large part of that is because we have limited access to the beach. We have several parking lots. We have certain streets that people can walk down, whatever it may be. And in the past, last project, we were denied any money from the federal government. They were originally going to give us $7+ million. They pulled the rug out from under us literally the day of the bidding, I think. And the argument, we had the Army Corps of Engineers people in here, or at least on the phone, to talk to us about it, and they said that one of their higher-ups had been in the process and visited Captiva and stayed here and saw various signs that seemed restrictive and saw there was a lack of access and ruled out, among other things, even the stretch of Captiva Drive that's being protected by the nourishment. And given the history of the drive, washing out in the past, etc., we felt that it should be covered. Long story made short, we're trying to argue the point that, number one, we have a lot of rentals on the island, and rentals are available to the public. We probably have more parking available by way of Tween Waters and some of the other places that isn't being counted. And so we're trying to go back and make the argument that there is a significant amount of rentals, as evidenced by bed taxes that are paid that are substantial. I think the county has not been an issue on this, as far as I know. But we are having problems with the state is giving us, what, an 11% cost share or something, and the Fed zero. So we're trying to win that argument. Our attorney thinks that we don't stand a chance with the Army Corps of Engineers, but nevertheless, we might have a chance. We feel if we get some progress with the state, that might create a segue to get progress with the feds, right? So now that's the background. Do you want to add anything into that?
So we have been working with Aptum and with Vince, who is our contact at the DEP, explaining our views on how they, especially how they look at the housing, the rentals, VRBO, all of those new things, Airbnb, that are out there that, you know, we're a huge rental island, mm-hmm. and we're getting no credit for that whatsoever. So they're looking into that. It's not going to be a short process. Yeah. We've also
just the same Vince that's been our interface for like 10 years or so.
Right. Now he did work with. Do you want to talk to them about the bike racks?
Well, we're trying to optimize the bike rack situation, so that's being worked on right now.
Let me put that in context. Aptum, Steve Keen in particular, who was formerly our primary candidate, but he's retired and now he consults with them periodically, had advised us at this meeting, the last meeting we had with them and Jackie Kaiser on the phone, that every four slots on a bike rack count as one parking space per car. So if we don't have adequate parking, we're allowed to have a certain number of bike racks. Apparently there's a limit to it. But so we're trying to optimize by making sure that we have bike racks placed with permission in the right places and spaces that we own or that we have access to, like the Allison Hagerup parking provides for some bike parking, to get a bigger count on the number of cars that we have. And they're working on trying to see what they can do there to enhance that, to see if we can rack up some more points on public access.
But even though we rack up all these points, how much will we get from the government? Not that much.
Well, he actually explained to us that because of the size of the renourishment, that the increase in four parking or one parking space, isn't it like $100,000? I mean, it's a significant amount. I think that's significant.
Well, the last project, we thought we were going to get $4+ million from the state. We wound up getting like $7 million. And I think we've got a very similar number from the county. Mm-hmm. So a sufficient amount of money was, and we used reserves, so that Captivans only paid, you know, I don't want to say only, but paid about $5 million towards the project. And the total cost of the project was roughly $20 million. This time they're projecting a $30 million cost. And the percentage, I think, has gone down with the state, if I'm not mistaken, and it's we're assuming zero. So we know that that's going to be a problem relative to closing the gap. We are hoping that Captivans don't have to pay that full $18 million. We're thinking maybe they'll pay $10 million of it. But again, it a lot depends on the support that we get from other, you know, governments. So it behooves us to try to do this. We do have certain citizens in the community that had been making noise with us relative to getting that federal money back, and they felt that circumstances are different now under a new administration and so on. At the end of the day, we can only try. I think we just have to try to work as hard as we can and continue to keep the Army Corps involved. We will remain a federal project, even if we don't get money from them, because we're working under a federal permit, which gives us some other potential. But in the long run, you know, that means we need more people in the community to be on board relative to what we're trying to do here, because there are people in the community who feel that we should just give up on federal money and then not have to provide more access, because they feel that we would be inundating the community with tourists and parking and so on. And as a result of some reactions, one of the things that the staff had looked at was buying a lot to make a parking lot, and there was some eruption in the community regarding that. And that's okay. I mean, people, nobody wants to be the neighbor to a parking lot. But in the course of that, one of the citizens proposed forming a committee of citizens or residents or property owners to try to look into some of these approaches that we're taking or some of the approaches that might be available. So such a committee, I think, is being formed, and there are people who are saying they want to be a part of it, and we think that's great. We think that we can get some benefit from that. Similarly, on sea level rise, I won't get into that in any extent right now, but the community panel is doing a lot of work in that regard, so someday we think they may come to us and provide input relative to projects that we should be considering, so we've reserved some money in our annual budget for that. Okay.
A couple follow-up questions.
Go ahead.
Carolyn, you said that, I remember quite differently, I believe you just said that one car you believe is worth $100,000 in federal funding, one parking spot?
That's what they told me on the phone.
Yeah, would you check that? I recall that being like worth 100 feet, and this is a few months ago.
It's several 52 feet.
Okay, and is that $100,000? Does that equate to $100,000, 52?
We'll verify that number. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I kind of remember,
exactly,
you know, kind of as Mike said, four bikes is one parking spot. I kind of remember it being some measure of beach. and
yes,
not a dock.
Yes, one parking spot is 52.8 okay. feet with the beach.
Okay, all right, okay, thanks
and
for clarifying
that. I got to relook at those numbers okay. to see what the money is.
And two other follow-up questions. Carolyn and Joe, and we know we're fighting this battle about the rental housing and showing that that's bringing access to our beaches. Do they treat, they being the federal government and the state, treat hotels differently than private? They do. And so...
It has to be over six.
I'm sorry,
what
has to be over six?
You have over six rental units in one property. So, for example, we've been looking at, well, let's say Bali High. Bali High can certainly house more than six people.
Right.
However, it only has, it can only be rented to one entity
one
at
lease.
A time.
Sure, okay. So it's got to have six separate ability. Okay, so my point is this. I believe we learned in Dr. Strong's last presentation, which is just was just a repeat of his previous two or three, that co-ops are now considered hotels up in South Seas. Have we looked at how much more that will bring in or potentially could bring in?
I haven't, no.
I think that was timeshare.
See,
I think it was timeshare.
What I said co-op. I meant to say timeshare. Right. Pardon me. Thank you, Mike.
So yeah. Timeshares used now to be called intervals, and now they're considered the hotel.
So that should bring in more
commercial.
Funding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's already done.
Oh, is it already done?
That's already, just confirm that's already big.
There was a report, I think it was maybe the LGFR report or whatever, that actually broke down what they're counting that shows us, it's the local, LFGR,
yeah,
I think
it
is, right? But anyway,
okay.
Local funding grant request. And I think it did break it down, and there was something surprising in there. I mean, Jensen's was included in there, right?
And they're adding Twin Palms.
They're adding Twin Palms, yeah, which is actually a residence... What is it called under 10?
Multifamily
under 10.
Yes.
Okay.
But it has six or more. It has the capability of renting out to six separate entities.
Yeah.
At one time.
Yeah. He's got a motel license on it.
So. Right. And finally, my last question is: when is the last time either one of you, or perhaps Mike, or I spoke with Jackie Kaiser, who seems to be our strongest advocate?
I talked to her at the FSBPA. The challenge with Jackie is that she's been promoted into a totally different position. I sent an email.
Since our conversation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
her replacement.
Okay, but since have you coordinated with her replacement and have you met her or him?
I did not meet her. She was not at the meeting,
okay.
But I have talked with her and I emailed just last week, I think it was, asking where we were at with everything and have not heard.
Okay, would you copy all of us on that?
Sure.
Any kind of correspondence you have with them?
Jackie mentioned that there was somebody up the line in her vertical reporting that stayed here and had some of the issues and ruled out much of the credit that we got the last time, which is why we got no funding. Could you ask who that is? I think that's somebody that, you know.
That's a long time ago.
Never gave us his name.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I think she suggested that he's gone, which was
that's when Jackie was still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
No, she was here on the phone just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I know.
So I assumed. But if he'd moved on, he moved up. But my point is, if we have somebody who's, a nemesis in this regard or whatever it may be, we ought to be able to meet with them and present better arguments and see what we can do there. Anyway, so that's the whole subject of the DEP discussion.
And again, getting back to that whole thing about calling and emailing, we need to have a history,
a documentation
of all the communication we've had with, particularly with the Army Corps on this thing, since that's such a potentially big piece of funding. And if not, then
what I've asked is in material discussions, whether it's with any of our outside professionals that we're paying for services or whatever, we try to make our request in writing and we get our answer in writing, so we have a documentation trail on that. So. Anything further on this?
I'm sorry. So do you want like a spreadsheet with the dates of when they were contacted? Or
no, I just want you to send a letter and say, Nancy Stroud, please answer this question.
Right.
That's
I get that.
Yeah.
But if you're wanting a trail of all the documents.
No,
I mean,
that in itself is a trail.
Emails,
when we have to go and research it, all the emails will be there
right.
And we'll have a trail.
Exactly.
We'll have to pull it out. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, you are keeping such a spreadsheet on constituent
public
contacts, which I think makes sense because we know that there are a lot of questions being raised there. So, okay, update on the parking lot. Joe, I think this is you.
I'm a little tongue-tied at the moment. I'm sorry.
Well, actually, the person who I thought was going to benefit the most from it is Bob.
Yes.
And Bob isn't here.
He wanted to make some comments, and I've been waiting on that.
Yeah, I think we need to have... I would try to call a briefing meeting and invite him and have it if he's going to be here.
Yes.
Maybe.
Over that on the 17th.
Okay. Except there's a lot of, work with the economists on the 17th, I think. But anyway...
Well, with the dry weather, the parking lot itself is pretty good, right?
We're still managing it a little bit, grading it every once in a while.
But you have found that the county is not opposed to pavers in the lot, you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. Our issue is that we got a grant from the TDC, and we ordered a porta trailer, I'll call it, right? But in any event, and I guess it's delivered, it's in storage at the moment. And there's some issues. How are we doing on the permitting at all? Are we moving forward on that stuff?
I wanted to get with you one more time before we started the permitting process.
Okay. Tomorrow afternoon, I'm here, or I'm available on the phone or Skype, okay? But I'm leaving early Wednesday.
Okay.
And I have a backup flight on Friday, which I'm hoping not to use, but if I have to jump into the backup flight. And then I'm back on the 16th, and... if we can do it between now and then, that would be great. If you want to see me tomorrow afternoon.
10 minutes, and then I can move forward.
Okay.
You mean we have a trailer that we have bought someplace, and we don't have permits yet?
Correct.
Isn't that kind of dumb?
Yes.
Yeah, but we're getting 25 cents a hit on it, so we're making it. I'm kidding. We'll put it in a public park.
It's just good thing Bob's not here.
Well, anyway, he's part of the issue that has to. We want to be sure that, because he's raised some questions sort of after the fact on some issues that we need to resolve. So.
Yes.
Okay. Website update.
I'm only again waiting for any comments or input from the board, and then as soon as you guys are okay with it, we can go live.
Personally, I would cut it loose at this point.
Okay.
And you have a backup. You still have a backup. What's that?
You mean go live with it?
Go live with it. Yeah, and then you have the other one as backup if there's any issues. Otherwise, I mean, you're not getting a lot of traffic on it, right? So, does anybody else have thoughts or questions on that? All right.
I had a question about the restroom.
Oh, go ahead.
I imagine the maintenance is going to be greater than the past, the current one. Who cleans it? How often do we have a clean? That sort of thing.
I'm anticipating the maintenance would be around the same, because it's going to. They'll just keep coming out and pumping it, just like what they're doing with the four
cleaning.
Right.
But
now.
Who comes in and cleans this thing? And how often will that?
Is there a bathroom, more or less? I mean,
here it is.
A vanity there.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I'm saying. So that's something that is not being cleaned today.
Yeah, we'll have to get that from Bob. Probably Bob Johnson. We'll talk to him about it, or we. Use our service that we have at the office, our cleaning service.
Did we ever resolve the internet access to it? Is that still an issue, being able to shut it at sundown, or are you going to?
It's still an issue, so we got to figure out the locks and how we're going to handle that. So I'm looking at a few companies right now.
Okay, my guy tells me that the company that we were using, that we were very satisfied with, is sort of disappearing.
Yes,
on that product line.
I've tried many times to talk to them, so we have to.
We're trying to get some replacements, and it turns out they're not carrying stock. And we got to go to the, Amazon, and we got to go to the market in general to try to find replacement, which is not a good sign for their future. So.
Yep.
And that picture is to scale.
As best as I could, sir.
Sound like a non-answer to me. This thing is like over the
it
over.
Is.
If the thing comes in and this thing is like, 6 feet over the palm trees, we're gonna have a lot of explaining to do.
The vegetation behind it is gonna grow and is fine. Fast growing.
I took the dimensions that they gave me, and I did my best case.
Yeah. No, it should be fine. The idea is for it not to be seen by the adjacent buildings, that's all. Again, part of what's driven everything to do with the parking is that, we're making good money on it. And it was not representative of the kind of community that we are and that parks and recreation thinks we should be, and some things have gotten out of hand in the past on keeping the park, it's a parking lot for a park, keeping it in the shape it should be in. And so we feel we're making enough money, we can spend some more money, and that there's a grant for this particular trailer, so there's a lot of support that's come to us from the Tourist Development Council and the Visitor Convention Bureau group. So we want to, you know, step up to that and earn, you know, the good. We're making, you know, $300,000 a year plus on that, aren't we?
Yes.
Net, I think. So I mean, it's a really good number, and we want to be very respectful.
It's a huge number, you know. I mean, really, it's.
Don't get me started. I don't want to go into the history. Mike will kick me under the table. Next thing is FEMA funds, and this is very good news to report. Would you do the honors, please,
sure.
Carolyn?
We are excited to learn that the FEMA money for Hurricane Irma went up from 75% to 90%. For us, what that means is they were federally obligated for $889,752, and they are now obligated for $1,038,045. So we're getting more money for the renourishment from Hurricane Irma.
Yeah, and we don't have to put bills against, I mean, all the work that's going to the nourishment will count towards that.
So, yes.
Okay. And I will say we should tip our hats to Governor DeSantis, who really went to bat to fight for more funds from the federal government on this. So, and I think we're getting more state money as well, you said, right?
Right. We were at a 25% cost share with the state, and now it's we're only going to be obligated for 5%. So the state, federal does the 90, state does 5, and then
okay,
that's great.
On this subject of funds, there's a lot of people in the community that have been volunteering to help us work out the apportionment schedule and how things, who should get, and that their neighbor pays more than me or whatever it may be. But there's been a lot of feedback on that, and there's been some discussion about going to a full ad valorem approach, which we've done the numbers on and is treacherous, I think. But I have tried to encourage people in general to say, if you really want to help, we're going to ask you to help with funding by writing letters to your representatives at the county, state, and federal level and let them see a barrage of requests for support from the people of Captiva. So we're working on something to that effect, Carolyn, as I recall, right? We're going to try to use this committee to some extent, but beyond that, I think we want to be able to work towards beach briefs that go out at the right time. And I don't know what the right time is. I do know there's a legislative delegation meeting coming up soon. I don't know if we plan to speak before that or not, but I don't know that it's terribly helpful. I've spoken to it in the past. I think they sleep on the presentations, but except the particular ones that they're
Are we missing any grants that we should be getting? Because, you know, we never used to get about. Now, all of a sudden, they're a big thing. Well, the last couple of years.
Well, we've looked at some grants recently, particularly some grants on sea level rise, and that's actually a nice segue for me to bring in Sanibel. Uh-huh. But I received a phone call last week from James Evans, who is the head of, director of natural resources or department head of natural resources on Sanibel, and he said that they had submitted on a grant that we weren't able to get to. We'd seen it, but we couldn't put it together in time, but they had submitted, and they're going to pay 25% of the cost of the project, and they expect the grant to cover 75%. And it's a modeling project regarding sea level rise to show us whether or not your house is going to go underwater.
I'm sure it will.
But they've said that they can include Captiva in this if we're willing to participate. So I accepted on behalf of Captiva because they had to submit the, I guess it was last Friday, they had to submit.
12 o'clock
today. 12 o'clock today. Okay, they got a little time. But in any event, so I'm officially advising this board, and I'll be advising the panel tomorrow, which has a sea level rise committee, that I've accepted on behalf. I see no downside, but, you know, it's going to cost us nothing. They didn't ask us to contribute, so Sanibel's covering the full cost of the 25%. So I think that's great that they went ahead and did that, and I think it was wonderful that James has, you know, gone out of his way to reach out to us to ask us to be involved, and mm-hmm. it's very characteristic of James, and that all my dealings with him has been very helpful in this regard, so we appreciate that. So thank you to Sanibel City Council, I think approved it already.
Yeah, the reason why we waited so long to jump on this, because we had known about this in, I think this grant was announced on August 1st, due October 7th, but we had to present the last, sea level vulnerability study to the city council and kind of get their approval for, and show them the next steps.
And they've approved, right?
Yeah, approval to move forward with the next step of modeling scenarios.
Right, thank you. Steve, I don't know if there's any update from the county relative to this subject. I mean, I don't know what's being done here even, but I know there's been some talk about possibly joining this regional compact. Is that something that's come up?
Yeah, I don't think any decision's been made yet.
Okay. All right, thanks. Under new business, we received a letter advising us from Hans Wilson for HWA that they were giving us 60 days notice under the contract to resign their involvement. I think that, again, in that we're short-staffed here today on the commissioner, we should start talking to staff and discuss how we're going to handle this on an ongoing basis. And I think that we may have to take a vote in next month's meeting on the subject, but I wanted to open it up to see if the commissioners had anything they wanted to say on the subject.
Well, I'd start with the fact that I think, as I see it, there are pretty much two ways to, there might be three, there might be many more than that. There's one to, but let's just say a few options. One is to hire Joe's consulting company, which I didn't realize you had, but congratulations on that. And Hans suggested maybe just turning over assigning it to you. So that's one thing we can choose to do. Two is to contract with you individually as consultants. Three is to hire you as employees of the CEPD. And that's all.
Or any combination.
Well, yeah. So those are the. We can start by talking about the merits of each. I don't mind. As long as I have the floor, I'll say that I'm uncomfortable hiring another consultant. Nothing personal against Hans or HWA or you. I found it to be. And this is an opinion, not a fact, by the way. I found it to be a little extra bureaucracy in something that doesn't need to be more bureaucratic. I think we can move more efficiently. That said, there's also going to be a burden then. If you're not working with a third party, potentially that being you or your consulting company, there's a greater burden on us then. Or potentially could be, but we're going to have to get to work and figure out how, what sort of professional services we need. If we do hire them as employees of the CEPD, I know it's been done in the past. I wasn't around for that. So that's my initial comments on that.
Yeah, I think that from at least the 80s through probably 2008 or 7, thereabouts, they had been employed staff. I mean, Allison Hagerup was there for a long period of time, but there were some people prior to her. I don't know if they were all employees. I think they were. Kate Gooderham was one, and Wendy McMullen, no relation, but there's another one. But I don't know all those details. It was changed after Allison died, and for a variety of reasons. And I'm a little concerned by some of the comments that we've heard in the last year relative to supervising subcontractors possibly being interpreted as meaning they get converted to employees by virtue of the supervision. And having been in the technology industry, I know we used lots of contractors, and I know I was in a major audit for many years with the IRS over some of those issues, which turned out very satisfactorily. But Microsoft, for example, was sued by a former, and other companies have been, by former contractors who worked on a long, ongoing basis and made the argument that they were really employees, which meant they were entitled to pension and other benefits that they hadn't received. So that's probably the big concern. And consequently, I think Hans had mentioned in some of these meetings that his ability to supervise the administration or to oversee the methods and so on was limited. It does raise concerns to me as to how is it any different. I mean, first, frankly, he raised the question concerning my supervision or my providing direction, by my interpretation, I didn't see any risk of violation there, but that's just my opinion, right? He did, but he also saw a violation of his supervision. So it's confusing. So if we meet tomorrow, we won't have a public meeting, but if we can meet tomorrow on this other subject and we can start to talk about that, I'm happy to, and I'd like to try to see if we can come up with some ideas so that when we discuss it at the next monthly meeting, we might have a better sense of where we're going.
These are three main ideas, and we just want to what direction the board wants to go in, and we're open to discussing.
I will say that, and I don't remember the numbers of when Allison was the, what her salary was and so on and so forth, it's a long time ago, and things have changed. But I do recall that there were definitely benefits involved. There was health care benefits, there was pension benefit, there's a Florida pension, I think that used to be roughly 10% of compensation. So I think that there's some things that should be explored, excuse me. Trying to freeze this, but anyway. So it would be useful to find out about some of that from this county people and other people that are all part of, you know.
Well, I want to ask you, if you wanted us to get involved in that process, that would seem a little bit...
No, if you can find out what the we're gonna make decisions about what the costs and the impact are, but if you can find out, you know, you can ask Sanibel, you can ask Lee County. I'm completely open to... You know, whatever method you want to look at there, but facts is what we need in order to be able to make an informed, mutually acceptable decision.
And we want to do what's best for you too, and that means that's a lot of work. You know, if you go direct employee with us, that's what I prefer.
Okay.
Rather than having a third party out there.
Well, frankly, at one point in the past, I think, Carolyn, I did ask you, and you did a little bit of homework to find out there, you know, whether there's a payroll processor that can handle the payroll side of things, and so we'll pay. But I'm not suggesting that direction, but you've done some work on it. It's important to find out what the benefits are. I know Bob has said in the past that usually a 30 to 40% markup above compensation is what's usually encompassed by benefits. But we also would then have some insurance obligations too. There's insurance that you guys are self-insuring, but covering yourselves, whatever it may be. I think that the new insurance plan that we're putting in place covers some of those issues.
Yes.
But I mean, it doesn't cover health insurance, life insurance, things of that nature.
Yeah, workers' comp, all that. Mm-hmm.
And I think we want to know what the typical benefits would be in the state if we were to go in that direction. So.
Okay.
And you know. Nobody should be taking a vote on it right now, and the commissioners shouldn't be talking amongst each other about it, but my feeling is I'm happy to sit down and listen to the ideas and talk about it and come up with some estimated cost and then see what the impact is on the budget and whatever, and we need to resolve this sometime in the next, you know.
Yeah, well, technically our contract is done at the end of November.
I mean, your contract with...
So less than 60 days.
Yeah, well, we were given 60-day notice at the same time.
Right.
Yes. Oh, I will say...
Could you mind articulating what your comments were earlier? I didn't hear them. I couldn't hear clearly what you had said earlier about...
Your preference.
No, my preference would be if they really became employees of the CEPD.
Right.
In one way or, you know, there are many different forms of that. Rather than going out and hiring another company.
Okay.
So we're, you know, we would be more involved.
Right.
And we'd be saving the people of Captiva a lot of money.
Got it.
Well, whatever that is, all I'm saying is it would be useful for us to do some homework and come in with a proposal.
And we can certainly do that. We just didn't want to be presumptuous.
No, you're not. No, I'm asking. And I know you've looked into some of it in the past, and I think that would be useful. So.
But this is the best of all worlds because, number one, now, even Mike, you have your number one, and you're always worried about if something happens to the number one person, there's no backup. That's what we want.
I have a wife. She's the number one, to be honest with you.
Or whatever you want to call it. And now we do have. So, I mean, either person can take over. So we don't need another quote-unquote company over you people to do the same thing as you're going to do right now.
Well, if you'll bear with me, just to say that we have some homework to do. I'm asking for their help in gathering some of the information. We can start talking about that tomorrow afternoon and further via email or by phone or whatever it may be. And HWA has graciously offered to assign the contract so that existing terms could carry forward to the balance of 1 year. Otherwise, it terminates at the end of the 60-day notice period, is what I understand.
But I think what we're failing to at least recognize verbally is that there was value that HWA brought to the table. They did provide a scope of service that we don't do, and Carolyn and Joe together don't do today. And I just, quite honestly, I'm not exactly sure all the things they did, but that would be nice to get our hands on as well. Obviously, if we're going to be picking up part of that responsibility, either collectively or
yes, because I reviewed their contract, and it's much different than our contracts.
Right.
So it's all a matter of how much you want me to take over or board responsibility on certain things.
I'm just simply saying, rather than speaking in generalities, I'd like to sit down and let's start getting into the specifics and know what the differences are and see how we would deal with those issues.
Absolutely.
But you're going to continue on right through, right?
If you'll have me.
Because it'll probably be longer than November 30th.
Well, we don't know that. I mean,
all right.
Okay.
Something needs to be figured out by November 30th because neither one of us is going to work for nothing. And you guys don't want
to. No, that's what I mean.
So something's going to happen.
You've got to continue on.
Figure it out. Yes. Yeah. We're both committed and dedicated to staying with the CEPD
as long
as everything gets worked out.
Right. Well, you're the ones got to tell us what's going to work for you. And we got to see whether it works for us and then the community.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a joint. If I can move on to the next item under new business, 8B, Allison Hagerup parking lot after hours usage for Captains for Clean Water event hosted by Sandy Stillwell on 11-6 and 11-14. I'm certainly a supporter of Captains for Clean Water, but what exactly are they having, a party or something?
So that's during the time that the Hobie International competition is here.
Okay.
And Sandy Stillwell is putting on two different events. And the funding, whatever she raises at those events, which will be held in her parking lots, I want to be very clear with that, will be held in her parking lots. The monies from that will go to benefit the Captains for Clean Water. What she's asking us is, could they use Allison Hagerup parking lot as a parking lot after hours and shuttle people to...
At no charge.
At no charge.
Okay. She's going to, according to the paper, she's doing some kind of a block party?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm certainly inclined to help the good work of the Captains for Clean Water, and I think what Sandy's doing is good. When the subject came up a couple of years ago, based on the recommendation of Lee County Sheriff's Office that we close at dusk, I know Sandy came in to speak about keeping it open because whatever she does after hours is fine. What I would say is that either she's going to have to buy insurance to cover it, or we're not going to change anything and she can just tell them to park there at her risk. Again, not trying to be, difficult about it, but the truth of the matter is that, I'm happy to go along with the whole concept, but I don't think we should accept any liability for people who are parking after dark. And, we went into the past over looking at lights there, looking at security gates, looking at a variety of things. And every time we did, we were advised by the Lee County Sheriff's Office that by not authorizing somebody to be there, by closing it at dusk, gave them probable cause to go in when they saw people doing there who might be doing mischief or might be doing nothing. But, that they had the opportunity to go and find out. So my feeling is that, we're not going to stop them. We're not going to lock it. But at the same time, that's just my personal belief. Now, if somebody else has thoughts on it, please weigh in.
Yeah, it's very reasonable.
Yeah.
So what I think I heard was that as long as she gets some kind of a liability coverage,
or alternatively,
or they park at their own risk,
or that park. Yes, exactly.
I think she ought to get some kind of a.
You can discuss that with her.
Okay. All right. The challenge is we don't meet again before this event. Our next meeting is November 12th, and the first one will have already happened.
Yeah, so I'm saying either one of those would be fine with me, as long as we don't have liability. I mean, frankly, when she wanted us to keep it open till 8 or 11 or whatever the time was at back when, that Jim Boyle had changed it to 11 o'clock, I thought that Mike Sawicki made an, you know, Lieutenant Mike Sawicki made an excellent case for the inability for him to be able to go and approach people who might be doing mischief.
Right.
And he claimed there was mischief from time to time in destroying some of the porta potties or other things after hours, moving benches down to the water.
Well, I know that from my time at the county that she ought to be able to get a certificate of insurance for those two specific dates.
Yeah.
For to with
she
us.
She can, no question.
Us. Yeah.
But the other part, the other point is that I'm assuming there's going to be alcohol served at this party. So, you know, we don't want to be taking any
money. Right, and that's in their lot.
Yeah, I understand. But at the same time, if they're coming and parking and they're, you know, drunk, everybody right. gets sued when he gets sued.
Right.
So we want to be, as long as we're absolved of any liabilities. All she has to do is indemnify and hold us harmless from anything that occurs, you know, in that parking lot or after the party related to the being able to park there. And you could tell her, I think the simplest way to do that is basically to say, we're saying no, but what you do, we're not going to be monitoring it and sending the police in. We never do anyway to monitor it after dark. Now, I have a property that I rent from time to time, and from time to time they'll do an event there, a wedding or something, right? And I did a big event to raise money for the community panel and for the clean water group called Pure once upon a time and so on. And I'm going to say it probably cost me about $1,000 to $1,500 at most. I can find out what it is exactly, but it's not a lot of money to get insurance so that if somebody's driving drunk after the party or whatever it may be, we're protected among, you know, all kinds of liability issues. So. And they will do it for one night or one day or whatever it may be. We've even had them do it for a couple of days running. So it's not an unusual thing.
When is Sandy still, she's one of the sponsors
yes.
of the Hobie event at South Seas?
I believe so. Yeah. I'm almost positive.
You should ask her how we can get passes to go in.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably posted on the South Seas website. I would think there's a lot, they're the ones hosting the broader event for Hobie. Next subcommittee, which I think we already talked about, but what would you like to know about that?
I just wanted you to see the list of the people that were interested, and the list is on page 151.
Sorry, 51 or
150?
151.
And this subcommittee is being created for what specific purpose?
So it's being created for them to come up with different ideas on what might be ways to get the renourishment costs down. So it's formed out of the concern that arose when we said, you know, hey, let's buy this lot and make it parking. And Jeff Brown in particular came and met with me and said, you know, As a subcommittee and as people who live here on Captiva, we may be privy to information that you don't know. There may be a lot of other things that could happen. There may be ways that we could work together. And so he suggested the subcommittee, and we reached out and asked people to let us know if they were interested. And these are the lists of people who came back and said they weren't.
Will there be a member or several members of several commissioners that will be part of this as well?
I would suggest you not have more than one, because if you have more than one, then it's subject to sunshine law.
Okay, so
well, we could meet under briefing. We could meet under briefing meeting umbrellas. I would actually ask that it sounds like the chairperson ad hoc is Jeff Brown. I would ask him to give us a scope.
Okay.
So we know what it, you know, in other words, I understand what we want them to do, but let's put it in writing, a scope and approach, and let the board look at it. And I mean, this is just a citizens' committee, a community committee, and we're certainly willing to give them a platform and listen to them and participate and so on.
But
this is not what you were talking about. You're talking about people that were on the committee to become just like a corporation when they have a director, something like that. they have emeritus. If somebody's been on it for a long time.
That's different. Yeah. Emeritus.
That's different than this.
Yes, this is different. This is a group of citizens.
Because your idea is very, very good.
The emeritus position.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
let's step back to the emeritus position we spoke about briefly earlier, but it'll be very similar to sort of a professor.
Yeah.
You know, a professor emeritus or a chairman of a company, public company, is emeritus.
Right, right.
And so they presumably it would be an active commissioner that would step aside for whatever personal reasons or professional reasons. They don't have the time to dedicate anymore, but their knowledge and wisdom is a value and an asset to the CEPD, so they would continue to, we could figure out what we still work on, and what kind of information they get, how they attend, that sort of thing. Right. This is specifically a citizen, and then I imagine we'd probably want to have a commissioner involved in this, I would think, at least at arm's length.
I just think that they should be defining per what they thought they could be helpful with. There's another committee that I could see coming in the future, which is the Sea Level Rise Committee. We're really calling it Bayside Initiatives or something like that, but the idea of doing things relative to what we might have to do on Roosevelt Channel and elsewhere that might help lead the way to dealing with issues in the future of inundation or whatever. Mm-hmm. We've clarified with our attorney that the entire perimeter of Captiva is in the purview of the CEPD, provided that they're erosion control and erosion-related projects. So, but the committee that's working on behalf of the panel, I'm not sure what they're coming up with. We'll learn more as we go forward. They've looked at a lot of different things, but they may wind up coming to us specifically with requests for help on some projects that might make some sense. Mm-hmm. So they can provide us with direction and information and whatever. But my feeling is that if they're going to want us to spend some money, I think it's going to have to be very tangible, as we want to do this project, we want this consulting company to work on it, whatever it may be, and we'd have to evaluate it and follow our normal procedure for competitive bidding and so on and so forth.
Speaking of that, did James Evans suggest when the study would start, conclude, and when he would?
They haven't been awarded the grant, but if they get awarded the grant, do you know when you're going to hear?
Yeah, so the grant the work period actually starts it starts July 1st of next summer, and runs until April 30th. That's like when the modeling and everything would be complete. Okay. So they're we're not going to know whether we have been awarded this grant until May 2020. That's when they're going to be making the announcements.
And it's Florida DEP that's
correct.
Making
they're
the grant.
They're like new coastal resilience. I believe it was created by Governor DeSantis. It's like their coastal resilience department. And it seems like there's going to be a lot of annual funding opportunities through this grant.
Yeah. We look forward to it. I think it'd be very interesting. And it's kind of a nice follow through.
Our governor has really been very kind to all of us.
Very surprising.
Yes, very.
A Teddy Roosevelt.
He didn't campaign on it.
Exactly.
It's been terrific. But anyway, the study would conclude April of 21.
Our deliverables will be due. Yeah. This modeling will conclude on April 30th, 2021.
And would recommendations be made with the conclusion or subsequent to the conclusion?
Yeah, I can speak on kind of what's going on. The modeling, they're going to be running two storm scenarios. Basically, Irma and Charlie are going to be the two storms, and we're going to run at least 24 different storm tracks for the islands. And hopefully out of this modeling, the previous component of the sea level rise sea level rise and storminess vulnerability study that was done with FGCU. We identified over 100 assets on the island, private and public infrastructure. We'll see how these assets will be impacted, through these different storm scenarios. And hopefully moving forward, then we can start to, at least in the case of Sanibel Island, have our adaptation plan, start making our adaptation plan to sea level rise and increase storms. And so we'll see how these assets perform in these hypothetical storm scenarios, well, actual storm scenarios and hypothetical storm tracks with Charlie and Irma and how they respond to storm surge and wind and things of that nature.
And you said 100 assets. Is that Sanibel or is that including
both
Captiva?
Both islands, yeah. Okay. Actually, I think it was actually, I think between both islands, Mike had said that Dr. Severson said there were close to 500 assets that were identified. And I don't know if that's like telephone poles, pole, but...
it might be wastewater treatment plants.
Yeah, wastewater treatment plant, yeah.
Library.
Exactly. Thing cultural and you know, grave sites, you know, exactly. Habitat types, things of that nature, all the way to people's homes and things.
So presumably when you talk about Irma as well, I mean, there was projection at one time of 10 to 15 foot storm. I mean, that'll be in there.
Yeah, so they're going to run like Charlie and Irma to validate their models, you know, to see how make sure everything worked out the way that it actually did work out in real time. And then they'll shift. Then we'll see what Irma looked like dead on hit, you know, the Sanibel and, you know, and Captiva and everything. And I'm sure they'll shift Charlie down, if it were to hit Captiva directly.
This doesn't sound like the correct phrase, but I want to say a slosh model. But what is it?
Yeah, it's not going to be a slosh model necessarily, but yeah, it's something in that sense. Yeah,
but I'm saying for Charlie, I saw one for Charlie that it kind of showed you graphically on the computer how whether you know the water was coming in at what level and where and so on and so forth. But I saw it after the fact, and so they're going to use those and they're going to apply it to the more granulated information regarding the assets on the two islands.
Sure.
I guess
is
what you're talking about. So.
Thank you.
Okay, the next subject is Malden and Jenkins, page 152 to 162, a proposal to conduct the audit. Now, this is the audit, not the bookkeeping. And I did have a question on page 158 of 169, where they had their finance expense. It's a $14,000 annual fee. And my question relates to, well, one, what was it before?
It was 14 last year.
Okay. And then the second part is $3,200 for each major program tested. And does this relate to the kind of programs testing that I was talking about earlier, or is this something different?
I don't know.
I wanted clarification on that myself, but I'm not familiar with that.
Okay.
And I read the entire document, and they weren't really referencing what that meant. But our total bill with them last year was $14,000.
Okay. I think we need to get clarification on that, and we do have another meeting prior to them starting on November 19th. I think you can give them a soft go-ahead, but they have to explain that, and or if they remove it and keep it at the $14,000, I think that, you know, I'd be fine with it going forward. Let me give the other commissioners a chance to find that sentence.
Yeah, I see 158, third from the bottom.
Yes. You understand my concern there?
I
don't know what...
It's not articulated very clearly.
No, it's kind of open. And again, the only program testing that I'm familiar with auditors, is where they'll do things to validate receivables or validate particular expenses. And again, I'm just a novice on this, but I've sat on audit committees before. Those are the kinds of things I've typically seen being done. But I think they need to be specific about that or just remove it. There is another point, and this is not unusual, but their hourly rates vary, and they're going to invoice according to the staff that they use. And they do mention that if significant additional time is necessary, they will discuss it with management and arrive at a new fee estimate before we incur the additional costs. Have we experienced that with them in the past?
We didn't last year.
Okay. So they're saying if we ask for something significantly different than what was done before, it might be an issue. So.
And what's the difference between what starts on page 152 and what starts on page 160?
Was like a cover letter, and then so it might be a little bit out of order.
It's a little bit strange.
Yeah. Yes, sir. And
It's dated August 1st, but received September 30, so there's 60 days. How did that happen?
That's when they sent it.
Okay.
They sent it August 1st or September 30th?
No, September 30th is when we got it.
And do we timestamp most of ours?
Date stamp,
I should say, yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so if you could just kind of go through this. I'll try to go through it myself. To be perfectly honest with you, we got this Friday night. I didn't quite get to the page 160.
Just to put into context, we have to submit to the state a financial report. I'm not sure when is that.
End of June, I think.
End of June. So basically, we can try to get this done in November, but if there's a little slippage, there may be a little slippage. And I remember when I first came on board back in 06, or rather in 07, when Allison got sick, it had not been submitted at all, and I reached out to the state and found out that we could get a six-month extension, which we don't want to have to do. We've not done it since that first time, but I think it's something you don't want to have to do. But at the same time, there's no downside to it. So we're not in a rush. Let's get this done right, and let's talk to them and understand exactly what they're looking for.
Would you like them to come to November's meeting? I think they came last year.
Sure, because the treasurer should be weighing in on this as well, and the treasurer will hopefully be at that meeting. But that would be nice if they could come.
Say, what did we say were the differences between the two letters?
We don't know. We aren't sure. That's one of the things we're going to ask
them. It's confusing.
They are different.
Yeah.
And they're all good. Within the day.
We'll get back with them and we'll put them on the agenda again for November of last year to be here.
I'm not going to guess. I think I have an idea, but we'll wait till they come. Sanibel Captiva Resilience Grant for, I already preempted that and spoke about it, stole that thunder, so we've addressed that. And I just want to say that we are very appreciative of the fine work being done by Sanibel in this area and that they reached out to us, and it's been a great relationship. We appreciate it. And administrators reports, FSBPA report.
Yeah, on page 163, just wanted to give you a written report of FSBPA, what it was like, and what we heard and who we talked to.
It would be nice if there were some takeaways, some actionable items that came of when you attend a conference. This was good. Thank you. I think, and it's a great improvement over historically. Because, you know, this is something that really is helpful. I don't know what goes on there, so this was very helpful to me. If there's any actual items that you think that we can follow up on, maybe put those at the end of the report.
You met with somebody at the Army Corps of Engineer or Florida DEP,
right,
or whatever.
Right. For example, I could have included the fact that we met with the new president of the FSBPA and talked to him about how we're probably going to ask for their help to see if we can get the rules and regulations changed for the DEP regarding the hotel.
They are
issues.
Our lobbyists, essentially.
They are our lobbyists.
I don't know. We
yes.
used to pay them like $5,000 a year. I don't know what it is now.
But yeah.
And so we should be able to ask for those. And they tend to tickle us on important things like the local funding grant request, et cetera. Excuse me. There were some actionable items in there, if I read it correctly, saying that there were certain entities that asked if they could, if we wanted to include their presentations on our website.
They will, they make available to us all of their presentations,
yes.
Usually about a month after.
Yeah.
And we can do what
but
we
I saw no downside to that other than there's some work involved in loading it. So do you have any, is that a big job to load that up, Joe?
No, sir.
Is they going to send us a PDF file of some kind or whatever, and we're going to point to it on the website?
Yeah, we'll put a link on our site.
Okay. So it sounds like a good idea to share that information for the public, and certainly the commissioners can read it that way as well. CDM training. This is a certificate for district manager.
This is being presented once a year or twice?
Once a year.
Once a year, so that's what we're putting in front of you now. but this is for us to get a certification for a certified district manager. And we both thought it was a very in-depth program that would educate both of us enough to do this right. It's headed up by Florida State, and we still have to make the application so we could be admitted into the program. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done there, but we wanted to ask your permission for us to go ahead and do this.
Commissioners, any questions?
I'm sorry, so this is a class?
Mm-hmm. A certification program.
A certification program, that over some series of time, will you physically attend this, or is it all online, or how does it?
We would physically attend it. It's held in Tallahassee.
Okay.
I believe it's the last week of January. I'm not positive.
Sure.
One of the reasons they hold it in Tallahassee is because one of the days they actually take you into the legislature and you listen to, you know, laws being enacted and all of those different things, and they'll take you to the people. We'll have a chance to meet the people that can make a difference in whether we have funding or not. So that's kind of an exciting step, and that's on Wednesday. It's actually a Monday through Friday program.
I was going to suggest that you reach out to the new head of the FSBPA, or people in that organization, and ask them if they, I've been involved in organizations like the National Wildlife Refuge Association or whatever, where we would be brought in to meet various legislators who were going to weigh in on issues and where we were going to be lobbying them. In fact, I did some lobbying with board members of the FSBPA, not the FSBPA, but of the National Wildlife Refuge Association. And that's a group that basically solicited funds on behalf of all of the wildlife refuges in the country. And it was an interesting experience. I would ask what FSBPA does with members, because they are lobbyists and they do call on them. Do they bring you around and introduce you to people, and compare that and contrast that with what this is, like an FSBPA for independent special districts, more or less, right? I mean, it's basically an association that's private and separate from the special districts, but they will do a certification and you go to district meetings to learn more about what district managers do and so on and so forth. So I do think that it's important. I would ask them about that if they're going to show you, you know, people who are going to be lobbying, but I would try to find out, because there are trips that are going to have to be made to Tallahassee at some point to pitch to some of these people. We've done it in the past. We've certainly done it with the local legislative delegation, so I would try to get more of a handle on that. And I personally didn't have enough time to read it. I understood what it was saying, and I would ask that if we could just bring this up again next month and maybe find out how it compares and contrasts with FSBPA. Because FSBPA is specifically about beach and shore preservation issues, right? This is more generally special districts, most of which in the state are not beach and shore. They're mostly fire districts and independent districts of that nature.
There's several inland water management also.
Okay.
But yes.
So if you wouldn't mind, I mean, I generally think it's a good idea if you're going to learn more about how to get funding, and that's an area that I think is a hole in our I didn't play a big role in that. I wrote some letters and I called on some people, but I know South Seas once provided a lobbyist who went out to get some money, and we use FSBPA. I think Jim Boyle, who was chairman under the last project, mm-hmm. did make some trips to Tallahassee along with Kathy Rooker, and it'd be good to know more about what that entails. So,
is it a very expensive course?
$1,200 per person.
$1,200 per person.
And there was two different prices there? Was one of certification?
Because we're members, it would be $1,200.
Okay.
If you're not a member, it's $1,500.
I got it. Okay.
Right.
And you would both go and you'd both be gone at the same time. Do they do this often? I mean, how often?
Yearly.
Okay. I mean, I'm generally in favor of it. I just think we should find out how it's going to help on the lobbying front. Any questions?
That's enough for now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Trim update.
Yes, I just wanted to let you all know that we are, we met all of the requirements for the TRIM. We have one more report that has to
point of clarification?
Sure.
TRIM is Florida's term for truth in millage. And TRIM are the regulations that they use that establish how districts and counties and so on budget, how you get assessed for your property. They'll send you notices in August usually. You can petition them and so on, but there's a very strict plan and schedule and details about how that whole process works, and we have to comply with that annually.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So there's one more step that has to be done by 5 o'clock today. We're all set to get it in. Not going to be a problem. The only issue that we had, when they put the notification in the newspaper on September 23rd, they put in the wrong millage rate and called them immediately.
The newspaper did.
The newspaper did. And it was their error. Called them immediately, couldn't get a person, actually got in my car and drove up to the news press because we couldn't let it wait. Found a human. She was very helpful. And the
but they
end,
did change it.
Yes, the next day they put the put the correct amount in.
Right.
Now my challenge is that they have to physically send us the paper because we have to submit that to the state.
Got it.
They have only sent me Tuesdays. We have 30 days, so we're going to be fine. I'm following up daily on where it is. I figured the squeaky wheel will.
Was there a standard operating procedure on how to go about dealing with those issues of the advertising and so on?
The trim notice is very detailed on all of that. There isn't necessarily a standard operating procedure like for us. Who do we call?
Yeah, the reason why I'm asking the question.
And I went back into the files the months before to find the person.
Yeah, I've been in the past, and I thought there was an SOP at one point, but a little paranoid about exactly that mistake. And
right.
We had established an understanding with the news press that they would send us a proof of their advertisement, that we would have get a chance to see it before they ran it. And I don't know whether they did that or if we're still doing that, but we should include that for the future because that's necessary. Because mistakes happen, the typesetters or whatever it may be type the wrong thing. And you have to allow
enough
time. There's
only one number. I mean, it was really
But it doesn't matter. Whatever is in that, they could misspell something, and anything that any mistake they make in it can result in nullifying.
Right. There had been a mistake the year before, but it didn't have any effect. So it was just something.
There's no way to put it up.
I'm simply saying that there is a process whereby you can get a draft before they finalize, and then you have 24 hours to say yay or nay or whatever. And I know we've been through this in the past.
Yes.
And usually because we can't schedule competing dates with the county commission and the Board of Ed, we kind of always try to figure out these meetings so that we can be here for other meetings as well. And usually you have to factor that in because there's a deadline of how quickly you have to be able to do this. So. It's trickier than it should be, but as long as you fixed it, that's good.
Didn't they send you the old version? No, you still.
It looked to me like the what they had sent the number was the year before, like they had pulled up the previous year's advertisement and just updated what they had, but that they forgot that number.
Okay, well, as long as you're going to get it fixed.
Yeah.
Before we adjourn the meeting. Steve Buttel has been kind enough to be here now and the last meeting, and I just want to say that you're the director of natural resources for Lee County or department.
No, that would be a promotion.
Oh, okay.
Or demotion.
Is Roland is Roland still the director?
Roland is still there.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So, what is your title then? Just so I get.
My title is Marine Operations Manager.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say that generally, Lee County has been very supportive in the past of the project that we're doing and what we do in general. And we do rely on them a great deal for money and other things on this project.
Yes.
And I appreciate their attendance at these meetings when they do. And the cooperation with Lee County, as the cooperation with Sanibel, has been great.
Yes.
And appreciate that. So thank you, Steve.
Don't take it personally when traffic starts backing up and we opt not to drive out.
Yeah.
Right. Don't take it personally if I'm on the phone. All righty. Meeting adjourned.
Well, I have a couple quick questions.
Oh, sorry. Our commissioner's comment. Sorry.
So I just want to follow up. So in the November, did we say that we're going to invite Marlon and Jenkins and Aptum to our November meeting? Did I miss?
Yes. Although we're going to try and set up Aptum for a briefing meeting.
Okay. Did we say that we're going to get, that you guys are going to get an inventory of contracts that we have with Aptum currently? Yes?
I thought we were looking at like a spreadsheet that was addressing different expenditures and sort of a reckoning of where we are with them today and what we see going forward. That's how I understood it.
Right.
I think it's pretty similar, but I just want to make sure that we.
Yeah.
And we're going, so we're going to follow up on exactly where we are on the renourishment contract and bid with Aptum. And we are going to presumably look to seek to get another proposal from another engineering firm. Is that kind of the way we're going here? Or?
You wanted, the way I understood it was you didn't want another proposal. You wanted another firm to review Aptum's proposal.
That was what was discussed last meeting. One might lead
to the other, but
right. So I don't know how someone would review that without having a.
I would call it due diligence. We're basically trying to make sure that we're getting the best result for the constituents of Captiva.
And then we're also going to put together some sort of SOP on how we proceed with projects similar to what Steve mentioned that Lee County does. I think they toggle at $2 million or more and having to get competing bids.
Yeah, we should simply request, there must be standard procedures. We see you talk to your legal department or who is the best person?
Procurement.
Yeah, so reach out to procurement and ask them if they can give us samples. I once in the past looked at the state regulations on it, and they cite certain counties that have certain methods and so on and so forth. And I mean, it gets a bit cumbersome, so I don't want to go into too much bureaucracy. But the truth is, there are good examples out there of what's being done around the state. But there's specific legal requirements that say you can stay with a company or turn them over or compete on a regular basis, and it defines that. So we ought to have the definition of that. And I'm sure that's all been incorporated. I mean, I'm sure what the county is doing is probably above and beyond what the minimum state requirements are, is my guess.
It's a strict interpretation.
Yeah.
And you'll contact the Mr. Brown, what was his first name? Is his first
Jeff.
Name?
Jeff.
Jeff, about how to proceed with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let me just, before we move too far from Aptum, let me just say that when I attended some of my earliest meetings of this group before I came on the board, so this is now definitely back in 2006, the subject was always being brought up by various commissioners, and it's a legitimate subject as to the hourly rates are high. They're higher than what we're used to paying in other areas, but these are unusual skills. But, I mean, there's been a lot of questions about that on an ongoing basis, so it's a legitimate thing to be looking into, that we're spending a lot of money, and you want to make sure that we're getting good bang for the buck. So.
Well, last time we really did get, remember, without the Army Corps of Engineers, everybody stepped in, and they all pulled their weight.
Yeah.
And especially with, we got better contracts with the dredges and things like that.
Yeah, and we don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of storms and other things that are drawing on those resources, so it's really a question of availability.
Yeah.
And we can ask that question about them when we see them, because I know once before Steve Keen, who was, was the guy, the main guy back when, before Tom Piero, he would say, if you can give them a heads up and say we can start, a different date, or we don't have to start specifically on this date, we'll move it back a year or whatever, if you give them flexibility.
And I think that's what they considered because didn't they submit a first proposal that was like $36 million, and then they came back with a $30 million, and one of those contingencies was...
And the $30 million had, like a 20% contingency in it. They have, but things are changing. The world out there, that was prior to Hurricane Maria, for example.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things that have been happening that affect all these factors. It's a dynamic world. So. Anyway.
I'm good, thank you.
Anybody else have any further questions?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Robin. Thank you.
Yeah.
So
you adjourned.
Meeting is adjourned, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, 2 hours.
Huh?
2 hours.
That's good.